This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 14th of January 2016 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. Today, Kathy Rensenbrink, author, director of Quick Reads and contributing editor at The Bookseller, joins me for this week's literary review. On the show, we'll be discussing two new memoirs, one by a Holocaust survivor who lost her father in a concentration camp, and another by a recovering alcoholic who returns to her hometown to battle her addiction. Then we'll talk thrillers as Fiona Barton releases her debut novel, The Widow. That's all to come on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. For the first half of today's show, we're going to look at a couple of memoirs that are being released this month. The first is But You Did Not Come Back by French writer and filmmaker Marceline Loredan-Ivens, which is a sort of letter to her father who died in the Holocaust during the Second World War. Kathy, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit more about the approach to this book and the author's background.
So it's written as a letter. So the whole thing is written, the author is writing a letter to her dead father. They were arrested together in Vichy, France. They were in Drancy camp together before being deported. He to Auschwitz, she to Birkenau. And it's just an astonishing document because I think as well as the parts written from the camp feel very immediate and also rather... I definitely felt there was there always seems more to learn. Obviously, there's lots of things written about the Holocaust, and I've read lots of them, but it felt very fresh, very vivid, a very different perspective. She was 15 when she was first there. But of course, now she's more towards the end of her life, and I found that very interesting as well, the fact that this is written from a longer perspective, from the end of her life. And as she says at the beginning of the book, she says, people always rather thought I was a cheerful person and liked that about me, but as I get older, I change. And I just thought that was very interesting as well. So it's a very rich book with lots to go at.
Now, it has been hailed as an important new text to tell us more about the atrocities of war. But as you say, the concept of war in these sorts of books aren't exactly a new idea. How does it go about shedding those new details?
Well, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? I mean, I'm not sure. I think there are some subjects that I don't feel will ever really be completed. And I think that there's, I think witness testimony that would have been written very shortly afterwards will probably be by its nature very different than something that's written a long time afterwards. One of the things I found very interesting in the book is that obviously the specifics are specific to this book, but actually a more generalised idea about trauma and its long-lasting effects. And I think we get that very much. And you feel as the reader, you really want her... both the 15-year-old girl that she was and the girl a couple of years later that comes back from the camps and her father doesn't, so she finds it very difficult to, in any sense, that awful expression, move on because she's grieving for her father. As the reader, you sort of want her, you're willing her to get better. But the way she puts the trauma on the page, I think, is very remarkable and has almost a wider relevance to the specifics of her situation.
It almost feels as though we're reaching a point where a lot of the voices that saw the Second World War firsthand are obviously starting to not be with us anymore. So it feels like we're getting to some sort of point where there'll be a bridge between the voices who saw it firsthand and those who experienced it through the voices of others and are then applying their own impressions onto what might have happened. Where do you think this book sort of fits in between them?
Yes, I think that's probably true. And I think, I mean, this book could well be the last literary, you know, piece of, because it's beautifully written. She's an artist, she's a writer, so it may well be the last piece of literature written by somebody who was actually there. I think that I would be interested to read something that was written by, you know, and again, things like this exist, written by a child or a grandchild, about the, you know, the long lasting effects of something that's so traumatic and that involves, I think, that both is so traumatic but also involves so many people. But of course, it also feels very relevant because there'll be plenty of 15-year-old girls all over the world right now in terrible peril and losing their fathers. And sadly, that does seem to be our destiny, doesn't it? That different ways, different races, different groups of people are at danger, but we keep doing it again and again.
But You Did Not Come Back is out in the UK on January 21st, published by Faber and Faber, and it has been released in other territories already. Well, let's move on now to The Outrun by Amy Liptrot, a memoir of her return to her childhood home of Orkney as she tries to overcome her alcohol addiction. Kathy, first, tell us a little bit about the author, Amy, herself.
Yeah, so she was born in Orkney, and the book opens with this very dramatic incident that happened on the day she was born. So on the day she was born, her father was sectioned. He had a history of manic depression, and she'd arrived 3 weeks earlier than her due date, and this triggered an episode in him. So he was sectioned. Because they were on Orkney, there was no secure psychiatric facility there, so he had to be helicoptered off to Aberdeen. But the doctors thought it would be good for him to see her first. So her parents were pushed together on the little tarmac at Orkney Airport, her mother in a wheelchair, her in her mother's arms, her father in a straitjacket, and that's where she was introduced with him. And that's the story that she's grown up being told, and her childhood was punctuated by his illnesses, but also was also a very happy childhood. So a very happy sort of outdoor, you know, the farm, the sea, riding horses down the sand, feeding lambs, and so yeah, that was her story really. Her parents went to Orkney because they wanted to buy a farm, and that was the furthest place that they could find, you know, the nearest place they could afford. It's because land there was cheap.
Oh, my goodness. So it's a book of two halves, really, about her addiction, but also a little bit of an ode to Orkney as well. How does the structure really play out? Because you've just mentioned some rather, shall we say, traumatic details there, but littered in between some rather picturesque and sublime-sounding elements as well. How did you feel reading through the book?
Yeah, it's a really interesting blend of nature writing and really superb, I mean, she's a writer, so beautiful, astonishing nature writing. And then the more autobiographical elements about her. I did talk to her about it, and she said that she initially, it was all going to be nature writing, but every time she showed it to someone, they were interested in why she was back in Orkney, you know, in her 30s, sober, finally. And she gradually kept writing more of those bits because people sort of wanted to hear it. So slightly not expecting it to, that's what it turned into. And I found those bits exhilarating as well. And actually, she does beautiful nature writing about Orkney and the wilds and the sea and the cliffs and the waves. But actually, she does really beautiful nature writing about London and London fields, and the urban stuff is also incredible. So whether she's writing about being, you know, off her face and rolling around on the pavement, or swimming in the sea one cold morning with nobody around, or spending the winter on, she spends the winter on Pape in a little cottage. There's only 70 people there, and she spends a lot of time alone. No matter what she's writing about, she has this complete ability to put you, the reader, there with her. So it's a very almost sort of sensual read, in that you feel physically there for a lot of it. And of course, the range of her experience is such that you feel, you definitely feel you've walked along with her in her shoes through all her experiences.
Well, another book about how nature has helped someone overcome some issues in their life was, of course, the very popular H for Hawk. Do you think that The Outrun could see some success similar to that one? Because, of course, success is such a fleeting issue, especially when it comes to authors and books and books that tackle issues like this one. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's true. Definitely H for Hawk has been very successful. And so people, once something is successful, publishers want to emulate it a bit. I really do. I mean, I hope this book gets lots of readers. And if it gets readers because they think it's a bit similar to H is for Hawk, then that's fabulous. But it very much stands on its own. It's an astonishing piece of writing, both about the world that we live in and about, you know, one girl's attempt to navigate her own difficulties. So I do hope lots of people read it.
The Outrun by Amy Liptrot is out today, published by Canongate Books. Now we're going to move on to a new thriller by Fiona Barton called The Widow. This one tells the story of Jean Taylor and the love of her life, Glenn, who is accused of abducting a toddler. Kathy, how does the story here unfold?
Well, it's just such a great premise, isn't it? So the book actually opens with Jean is on her own at home. Her husband has died, and the press want to talk to her. And that's how the book opens. So it's a cracking setup. And the author used to be a journalist. So quite a lot of the book's written from the perspective of the journalist. And you do feel the author's getting that bit spot on, because she knows of what she writes. And it's, I think it taps into that thing, which is sure, I'm sure we've probably all wondered. And as I was reading this book, I kept thinking of it. When you see people, you know, when you see men accused of terrible things and women standing next to them on the court steps, sort of smiling, looking at the ground, standing by them. And you do think, don't you? People do think, she must know. Is, you know, everybody does wonder. And I think sometimes
everyone wants to know what's going through that head.
And that, and I've, again, I probably know this through reading novels rather than interacting with the real world. But again, I think when somebody is accused of something, people want the, you know, the people in charge of his defence want a nice looking wife to come and sit there supportively. That will, you know, that will mean a lot. This whole idea that if you have a nice wife, you therefore are not capable of doing horrible things. So I just found the whole, that whole area incredibly interesting. And then the thriller really delivers. It's just a cracking, page-turning. You just want to keep reading. And then, of course, as ever, in a very good thriller, things aren't necessarily what they seem, and there are lots of surprises to come.
So, as you say, this is told very much through the eyes of a journalist. How do you think that you felt about that character as you were reading through the story? Did you feel as though the character was sort of making up what she wanted to happen as you were going along? Or does your journey with the character sort of change as you get through the plot?
I thought it was very good in the way, because you get three perspectives, the journalist, the widow, and a policeman who's also involved. And it really does help you see about how the, and of course you only ever see the husband through everybody else's eyes. But it really does make you think about all the people on the periphery of a crime, who they are and what their different experiences of it are. And I thought that was really well done and very well balanced. And your sympathies do shift, because there are times when you find yourself, you want the journalist to get the story. So you want her to get...
We all want the journalist to get the story.
Yeah, and then there are times when you slightly want the widow to escape the journalist, for the journalist not to get her story. And that's all quite done. That's all quite well done, the way that that's balanced. And the policeman character is good as well. So it fits together very well. It's, I think, basically thrillers should be page turners, or else that it's not a thriller, is it, if you don't want to read through it as fast as possible with your heart thudding?
Well, I think a thriller by its definition has to leave you feeling somewhat thrilled.
That's right.
So one would hope that's what it's getting across. Yeah. I'm sensing a little bit of Gone Girl territory here, but this is Barton's debut novel, but yet the rights for this have already been sold to over 20 countries, and apparently there's been some interest from TV producers as well. What do you think is the universal interest? Why are people so excited by this?
Well, I think with thrillers, there are lots of good thrillers, and then every so often one thriller becomes enormous, and word of mouth will propel it to superstardom. So like, as you mentioned, Gone Girl, Before I Go to Sleep by S.J. Watson, The Girl on the Train, I think was the main one from last year, and those books go on to sell volumes, you know, millions, and are made into films, and then the film tie-ins go on to sell millions. So everybody's always looking for the next one. I think some of the ingredients as to what is going to be a superstar thriller rather than just a good serviceable page-turning thriller that does its job, I think it actually almost possibly is in the word of mouth talkability around the subject. So I think something that has a good hook that can be quite easily described, where people immediately think, oh yeah, I get that, that's interesting. And I think also something that's relatable. I do think one of the reasons why The Girl on the Train works so well is the setup of that it's a drunk girl on the train who can't remember things properly because she gets too drunk. Loads of people have been the girl on the train. They might not have witnessed a murder, but lots of people have been the girl on the train. And I think, again, with the widow, hopefully not many people have been married to somebody who might do a terrible crime. But I think we all think about our partners and what we know about them. Being with someone is about working out how well you know them, and would you be surprised? Could things surprise you about them? So again, it's that wider relatability that means something is going to be appealing to lots of people and that they will want to talk about it.
Making people feel like this might be how I would react if I were in such an unusual situation. I'm getting the feeling that this is your kind of book, actually, Kathy.
I do like them. Yeah, I do. I think Gone Girl as well. Gone Girl is fascinating because the plot of Gone Girl, it's just about a couple, and you keep, you know, when you hear Amy's story, you believe her, that she's the good one and he's a beast. And when you read Nick's story, you believe him. You know, he's a, you know, stand-up guy, and she's an awful waste of time. And again, I love the way that works, because most of what, again, being in, I think a lot of relationships are about how people meet each other and put on their best face, and then a lot of the relationship is people getting to know what they're really like. And so it's turned into a thriller, but it appeals to that essential thing that most people experience, that idea of getting to know someone and finding out what you both really like and dislike about each other when you're no longer just pretending to be your best selves on your first date.
Indeed, indeed. The Widow is out today in the UK, published by Bantam Press, but the rights have also been bought in countries such as Denmark, Germany, Holland and Italy. So look out for it wherever you happen to be around the world. And that does bring us to the end of this thrilling edition of the Monocle Arts Review. Thanks to my guest, Kathy Rensenbrink. You have, of course, been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow to talk through some of this year's Oscar contenders with David Jenkins from Little White Lies magazine. Looking forward to that. But for now, goodbye from me. Thanks for listening.